So what are you supposed to do between each Engadget podcast? Wait in silence? I'm Matt Smith, and every morning I walk through the day's biggest tech stories. It's short, relevant, and ready for listening whenever you wake up. Find Engadget Morning Edition wherever you find your podcasts, or ask your smart speaker for the latest news from Engadget.
What's up, Internet, and welcome back to the Engadget Podcast. I'm Senior Editor Devinder Hardwar.
I'm Deputy Editor Sherlyn Lowe.
This week, it's all about WWDC, Apple's Developer Conference,
is
happening. It's a tongue twister. It's happening next week. Both Sherlyn and I will be there. This is the first time we're both going to be there together. Honestly, I've never been to an Apple thing in person at the campus, so I'm very excited. Sherlyn, you've done this a couple times. Mm-hmm. We've got a bunch of news to talk about there. But as always, folks, if you're enjoying the show, subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave us a review on iTunes. You know, you can subscribe to us anywhere, too. I really like Pocket Casts. You can also email us at podcast@engadget.com. Drop us some questions. We'd love to do some Q&A on the show. We also live stream the show, typically Thursday mornings around 10:30 a.m. Eastern on our Engadget YouTube channel, so tune in for that. Joining us to talk about WWDC is Engadget senior writer Sam Rutherford. Hey, Sam, what's up?
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing good. I think we're all doing good, and we're all a little pumped up, as we tend to be ahead of like a major
news event. This is kind of the calm before the storm a little bit?
Usually. Like, all the rumors are coming in. Everything's coming in. I know Sherlyn is like super stressed already about
everything we're going to have to do. Always
stressed. That's not news.
It's a constant state.
Unfortunately, that is the state of existence here, because it's going to be a big event. Like, WWDC, even though it's a developer conference and we just got through Microsoft's and there was a ton of news there.
Yeah.
And Google's. It does often lead to news for consumers, and what the developers are thinking about will ultimately, you know, make a difference in consumer products. So I'll start with you, Sherlyn, because you are our Apple lead. What are you thinking from WWDC this year? We're all expecting the you know, the mixed reality headset.
Yep.
That is like the big thing.
Yep.
But let's put that aside. Like, beyond that, what else are you looking forward to there?
Aside from the headset, I think I'm excited for, like, whatever they might surprise us with, right? On the off chance that the headset's not there, on the off chance that, like, you know, that's not there, one more thing.
I don't think there's a chance of that after all these leaks, many of which seem planted by Apple. Just like,
maybe.
Hey, here are all these details about this thing that people should get excited about.
Yeah, because listen, you're going to look at stock price after this. The reason there's so much hype, the reason there's so much like anticipation, if Apple plants leaks, it's for what reason other than, anyway. But other stuff that I'm looking forward to, I mean, I heard, at least based on some of the rumors, that watchOS 10 is supposed to get some kind of huge redesign. That'll be interesting. I am skeptical based on what we've seen that it will be good. I'm not sure. It sounds like the rumor is that they're switching over to a more like glances focused interface, less app focus, more glances. So don't know if that seems a little too like Wear OS.
I was gonna say that sounds a lot like Google, Google's been trying to do.
Exactly. So we'll see.
We'll see back and forth. I think a bit of competition would be good, because the thing about Apple Watch is that they've kind of been the one really successful smartwatch for a long time. It's only recently like Google's like, hey, we've forgotten about Android Wear. Just like, here's a Pixel Watch. Here, reset. Let's do this again.
I love that you said Android Wear.
I remember. I remember all these things. I remember all of your failures, Google.
One of the big features last time was there was a scuba diving mode for the Apple Watch. And it's like, how many people are actually using that? It's like, is that something that really needs a lot to be like talked about? It's like, oh, it's cool.
When last have you heard about the Apple Watch Ultra, by the way? That was our big thing last year.
Yep. It's a philosophical question, right? What do people want out of their smartwatches? I feel like we've hit a point where like we don't need you to change that much more. Chill.
That's true. Maybe Apple's projecting ahead. Global warming is a thing. Sea levels are rising. We're all going to have to scuba dive, you know, daily.
So, Waterworld, baby.
I don't know. Waterworld.
Oh,
that's where we're headed.
That's a nice movie.
I think, but, so let me just like skim through a couple of things here. We expect watchOS. We expect, honestly, OS stuff, because this is a developer conference.
Software.
And this is where Apple's like, pushing out all the software, pushing out what to expect. We're going to hear about iOS 17. We're going to hear about iPad OS 17 for sure. Mac OS 14,
Let's guess the name of macOS 14, because what we were talking about this before the show, right, Devendra? You were like, let's play a guessing game, bet, take
let's
bets
play
on the name.
A guessing game.
Yeah. You in the chat room, if you're watching with us, guess, throw your names for the next name of macOS. But we here, me, Sam, and Devendra have thought about this. It's probably going to be like some kind of California landmark. My money is on macOS Golden Gate Bridge. No. Actually, no, wait, hang on. I take that back. No. macOS Alcatraz. I feel like that's a rhyme, dude.
Maybe that's the one they don't do.
Yeah, that's the one they don't do.
I mean, if they got Nick Cage come out on stage and talk about that, that'd be great, but it's not going to happen.
macOS The Rock. Mm.
macOS Alcatraz. I kind of still feel like that's a bad connotation, but it's still
bad
has
vibes.
Like that
place is all bad vibes, Sherlyn.
What do you think, Sam? What's your bet on the name?
I mean, Golden Gate Bridge. They've never done a macOS based on a structure before.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I like it, but they'll never do it.
I like the name
Golden Gate. It symbolizes a lot of things. And I feel like that is parked for a moment where Apple's like, macOS, iPadOS. It's all the same baby.
Yeah.
It's Golden Gate. That would be the Golden Gate.
They'll bridge it. Yeah. So maybe I was right on the money my first guess and I went a little too far.
Maybe I wouldn't say this year.
Maybe two years from now when they finally merge iOS or iPadOS and macOS.
They'll just be like Golden Gate. That's what they call it. Devendra, where's your guess? What was your like?
I'm thinking there are a couple I'm thinking of. I don't have like all the California things in mind, but I think one they've never used and one I really like to say is Tahoe.
Yep.
I think Tahoe represents chill vibes. Whenever people talk about going to Tahoe, I'm like, oh, that sounds relaxing. I don't know what that is, but
what if they pivot to the East Coast? They're like macOS Hamptons. Like just
macOS Gowanus.
Oh god. macOS Brooklyn. We're moving to New York.
Oh man. They did
Sierra, right?
Yes.
And then so someone in the chat dropped Sequoia. And I like that, but I don't know if like that actually works.
Sequoia? Sequoia is interesting. I was thinking Redwood, actually. So I was like, oh, maybe like
you've Mac got West so Redwood. Many.
Like a tree.
They're going to save Gowanus for the eventual like Windows crossover ones. Like, that's what you get. Microsoft.
It's a very bad connotation, but yeah.
That's actually the iTunes on Windows feels like it comes from macOS Gowanus.
Someone from trash. Apple is probably listening to us now going, like, crap, they got all our ideas. They're going to change it. But anyway, macOS was one of the things we expect to see.
Well, you know what? This is a good one, folks. You know, drop us an email. Like, we will, if anybody guessed correctly, by next week, we can announce that on the show.
Yes.
We'll certainly gloat if any of us got it right, right?
Yes. We've got a lot of good ones out there. But go on, Dev. You were running through the list, and I totally
I was running through the list. So it's all the software, right? That is all the big software stuff.
Yeah,
we're expecting maybe some hardware too. There is aside from the headset, there's been a lot of rumors about a 15-inch MacBook Air, which I think would make a ton of sense given how popular the MacBook Air is right now. The new redesigned 13-inch one. I have a unit that I just like cannot let go of because that computer feels so good. It's so thin. It's so like light and portable, and it's still powerful. And it like does all this stuff. The only thing it doesn't have is like a high refresh rate display. I could see Apple being like, well, here's a bigger one, and it's maybe it'll have promotion, or maybe it doesn't even need to because Apple tends to like really separate those features between the Pro and basic line. But even a normal 15-inch MacBook Air with the specs right now, maybe an upgraded chip or something,
or better webcam,
I think would do well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep.
Better webcam, something. It would do really well. Like, just give me a thin, powerful computer. It is insane how powerful the MacBook Air is with no fan, you know, and at that weight and thinness and everything. So, yeah, I think people would want it for sure. What are you feeling, Trillin? Is there any hardware you would like to see?
So I'm still kind of looking at the names that our chat people are throwing out. We've got a lot of good ones. Diablo Range. There's a macOS Seattle Coliseum. I suddenly thought macOS Presidio might be a good one. But anyway.
I like Presidio.
Right? Yeah. But back to the hardware things. It's so hard to predict with Apple. Sometimes they just randomly do shit. I would not discount things like AirPods or AirTags, like the little accessories randomly come out sometimes. You just don't know when to expect them. Typically, yes, hardware season, so like August or September. But, you know, I can't say that they won't do this. I'm getting the sense that there will be more things than we expect or have heard about this
year. It sounds like we may, just hearing rumblings that there may be
my spidey senses are tingling is all I'm gonna say. I can't say too much more than that, and y'all can take this as what it is.
Another piece of hardware that's worth shouting out is that, you know, Apple has often like given previews of its new chips at DubDub. I believe last year is when we first heard about the M2 Air. Don't quote me on that, or the M2. It does seem like there are several reports that Apple is already testing M2 Max and M2 Ultra chips. The M2 Ultra has not been announced yet. The M2 Max already came out in like the MacBook Pros and I think the Mac Mini, right? I reviewed that one. The M2 Ultra would be a brand new chip, potentially in a revamped MacBook Pro or even a Mac Studio, because the Mac Studio is where the last Ultra was and that never got an update. And people were living with like, I think a lot of people were waiting on buying the Mac Studio because they're like, that's gonna get a nice chip update this year. So I wouldn't be surprised if that happens. And the other thing is that we've been waiting on the Mac Pro redesign forever. They've been teasing it for years. We've been hearing it's going to be something special. The last one was yet another flop from Apple. I think high-end fans and especially power users, the people who pay attention to this developers conference, the people at this developers conference want a good Mac Pro and not just a Mac Studio, you know? So I wouldn't be surprised if we got a little tease of that. Yeah.
I really quickly, Mobius in the chat also said maybe iPhone 15. And I'm like, look, the full iPhone 15, probably not till the fall, but I wouldn't rule out also an iPhone SE.
I was just about to ask you about that.
Sam?
You know, they released a newer one in 2022, so it'd be a slightly earlier refresh than normal. But, you know, what do you think? Do you think they could, you know, like, would they get rid of the home button or like, ooh, you know?
They might. They just
finally
might.
Finally move over to like Face ID for just everything. You know, we'll see.
We'll see, because I mean, that's the last phone left with a home button. So I miss it, kind of. Kind of want it still. Dang.
I don't know. It is weird to see that in the line and be like, oh, that's blast from the past. Like we're in a modern era of like swiping up from the bottom and.
Right, and, feels a little and old. Because it's a 2022 phone, but the design of that phone is from like 2017, so it's just like, okay, so the phone looks older than it actually is, which is like a really like weird like situation.
Go ahead.
And all the other hardware, by the way, folks, don't forget, there will be an iPhone event, there will be an iPad event, there may be a separate MacBook event later this year. So
Apple, I'm already getting anxiety.
Towards the end of the year. That's all our future work. Our work right now is like whatever just dub is. We'll talk about the headset soon, but what's up, Sherlyn?
Yeah. Let's not forget that, I think this is going to take us into the headset chatter, right? Which is the invitation image and the words on the invite usually give us some kind of hint as to what to expect. And this time around, the image was like a little curvy, circle, whatever thing. The words were swiftly developing on the invite. Mm-hmm. And
those look like lenses, by the way.
It kind of looked like lenses.
If you look into a VR headset, what you see are concentric rings because they're done like that so to help your eyes focus better because it's like right up front against your eyes. So that would be my guess.
So it tells us a lot. I think the image seems to quite clearly indicate it's the headsets coming. I wonder what swiftly developing might mean. I mean, it's clear Swift is their developing language and developing, this is a developer's event, but like what beyond that? Like maybe they're using Swift to develop Reality OS. You know, maybe that's what it is.
This is what it is. This whole event is a please, for the love of God, help us developers. We're going to have this thing. It will likely be too expensive. It likely does not have much functionality right now. But with your help, we can make this the next iPhone, the next iPod, you know?
Yeah. I mean, let's talk about this headset, right? What's it supposed to do? Because we've seen some of these rumors. Dev, like, are you excited for the rumored headset, the specs and everything?
I mean, I'm excited to write about it and to talk to people about it and to finally see what this is. But let me give you guys some history, right? Like back in 2015, 2016, soon after I joined Engadget in 2014, I did a rebuild of my desktop computer. And everybody was talking about the Oculus Quest. Not the Oculus Quest, the Oculus Rift. And the actual final version hadn't hit yet. We knew a lot of stuff was coming. So I rebuilt my computer for VR to be able to do VR stuff. And that was a wise decision because it meant I could actually review all the headsets. I spent my time. I really enjoyed those early ones. They had a lot of problems. I reviewed almost every major consumer headset that hit. I didn't do the Quest Pro just because somebody else did that. And also there was another room. Did you end up doing that one, Sam?
Yep.
Yeah. So Sam did the Quest Pro.
I think you were busy at that time with something else. Yeah.
I was all busy. But also that wasn't really a consumer headset too. Like that was a weird thing. So I've seen all the VR stuff. I just did the PlayStation VR 2. And I think what we've learned after seeing the kind of lackluster sales from the PlayStation VR 2 is that the appetite for VR may not be there anymore, at least VR in the high-end traditional sense. And the PlayStation VR 2 is really expensive. The Quest has succeeded more because it was cheaper, it was standalone, didn't need to be connected to anything. I just think VR is in a weird place. And then I got to thinking about, like, I'm working on a preview piece about this stuff too. Where is Apple right now? Like, is Apple entering this market? Sort of like where Apple entered with the iPod, right?
Right.
There were other MP3 players. It was kind of a burgeoning market, but it was tough to get your music on there. There were no centralized music stores. Like, the iTunes store itself was kind of a revolutionary idea for all of its flaws, like a lot of heavy compression, high prices, I think, early on too. The iPhone came as BlackBerry was pretty huge. Things like the T-Mobile Sidekick were out there. We knew people wanted more multifunctional phones. But the pieces, to put it all together, Windows PC or Windows Pocket PC was a thing too. Like, those were all devices that existed before, and it kind of took the iPhone to kind of unite everything and also be prepared for the upcoming 3G cellular networks, be ready right. for faster networks. Whereas before on cell phones, you were counting your minutes or you had like a very minuscule amount of data. So I don't think Apple has had like a transformational product since then, right? The iPad, sure, was a big deal, but it also felt like an offshoot of what made the iPhone work and also the store and everything. The Apple Watch is an iPhone accessory. The AirPods, which are, they make enough money with the AirPods to make more money than most other companies, to be honest. Like, the AirPods alone are a huge business, but those are an accessory. So Apple needs a new platform, right? What is the next new platform? Likely headsets, likely all the stuff we've been seeing, but it's kind of messy. It's not for everybody. It's expensive. It's hard to use. There's not much content there. My question is, how does Apple solve this? All the rumors we've seen is that this initial thing we're going to see is a mixed reality headset that will cost around $3,000, is not really meant for consumers, but maybe more a thing for developers to look at and play around with and start building towards. That is kind of where we're at. This is not the next iPhone, but it almost seems unique in that Apple is being like, okay, well, we know this is a thing. We just don't know. We don't have the support for it yet. We don't know quite what it's going to be. It seems unusual. Like, as somebody who follows Apple, how do you guys feel about this? Like, Apple entering the mixed reality space.
Sam, do you want to go first?
Yeah, sure. I have a lot of thoughts about it, just because it's like, I think what you said is very accurate. It was like, the headset, this is not for you, in the same way that the Meta Quest Pro was not for you. And if you look at a lot of the rumored specs compared to the Meta Quest Pro, there's a lot of similarities. You know, you're talking about, you know, 4K resolution, pass-through cameras, VR plus MR capabilities, and facial tracking and stuff like that. So a lot of very similar, like, tentpole features. But the thing is, you know, expected price between $2,000 and $3,000, this is clearly not for you. And so what, like, you know, what is Apple trying to do with this? I think even more so than Facebook or Meta or whatever, Apple has like this unique ability of having like a huge built-in like population of developers and stuff like that. And so by, hey, let's put some hardware out there. We're going to talk about a new VR platform OS system that's going to power this thing. And so they're kind of setting the groundwork for something to come. And then maybe, you know, in a year or two, we get, you know, Apple's version of the Meta Quest 2 or Meta Quest 3, which, you know, so we have something that's more consumer level appropriate for, you know, the everyday person. And so I think, you know, and it's also really interesting because, like, some of the rumored, like, design things, it's like they're going to have an external battery pack with a wire that's going to the headset. That feels like a very un-Apple, like, un-Apple design. And there's, you know, there's a lot of good reasons why they're doing it, because by removing the battery pack, you're removing weight. So it's more, you know, it's more comfortable to wear. But, you know, it just feels a little bit clunky for an Apple thing. And this, you know, really points to me as, like, this is going to be a very developer-focused only. Obviously, you know, that's why they're talking about it at WWDC.
Yeah. We don't see Apple do this. We don't see Apple come out with sort of, like, a half-finished idea. Because typically they're like, here's the iPhone. It's your iPod. It's everything. It's the web to go. Maybe the App Store wasn't there at the beginning, and that kind of transformed it over time. But we never see Apple being Here's the thing, guys. I don't know. What's up, Sherp?
No, which is why it's, like Sam said, more of developer play right now. It seems like, yes, we want you to swiftly develop these apps and use cases for the mixed reality headset, which I don't think people will be able to buy until at the earliest later this year. Mm-hmm. So, but what we're hearing are some of the demo experiences they might show at DubDub include things like FaceTime calls one-on-one with full body avatars, right? We think they might do pages. Productivity seems to be the focus, right? Like up front.
Virtual remote working.
Right. Like Horizons, the workspace, whatever mm-hmm. Meta's version is. And like, so pages and slides are some of the things that they seem to have already got demos prepared to do. Clearly, they want developers to do more with it. They don't know. They don't know what else they can do because they're so app-centric as a platform, as a company. I like the idea. One of the rumors was that like you can type in midair with the six cameras that are supposed to be on this thing. But have we even talked about the hardware specs? Like there's supposedly a crown on the goggles on the headset to switch between.
Yeah, let's I guess step back because we've talked about this thing before a bit too. So what is this? It is not just a VR headset. It sounds like it is, and it's not just going to be like an augmented reality headset, like something like the Magic Leap. It sounds like something in between. And honestly, when I tested the Magic Leap 2, that was a device that really made it clear that, oh, you could actually kind of switch between an AR mode and a VR mode seamlessly. So that is kind of what this headset seems to be. I imagine it's going to have a screen in the front that you can actually see somebody else's eyes. We don't fully know what that could be. Okay, for $3,000, I do feel like Apple may be able to like make that happen somehow. Maybe looking like a Magic Leap like product, but that crown. There is a report from Gurman, from Mark Gurman at Bloomberg, that there is going to be a crown to help you kind of like transition between AR and VR mode. And when I tried the Magic Leap 2, it does this thing where like it can cloud out the foreground. It can cloud out like what you're seeing. It could cloud out the real world in front of you to just focus on a holographic thing. And then it's like, I'm just watching VR. Then I'm like kind of blocked off from the world a little bit and I'm watching 3D objects and things like that. And that felt really interesting when I demoed it. So given that that hardware itself is a couple years old, I imagine Apple has like something even more seamless. Something you could put on to switch between AR and VR. My real question, though, is all this stuff has been focused on games so far. So, like, what do we do with an Apple mixed reality headset? Why would you want it in your life? Like, the iPod's answered a question. The iPod's like, hey, all your music right here, buddy. The iPhone was like, hey, the entire web in your pocket, it's a supercomputer. All the things that have really been successful for Apple, I think, served a very specific and very obvious need. I still don't know, even as the person who's tested all these things, I don't know what the need would be for Apple to get into this space, at least in the near future. Maybe in the future when we have like glasses-sized goggles that you could wear, maybe there are things you could do there and make it more consumer-friendly. But for the next 5 years, I still don't know why a general consumer would be caring about this. What do you guys think?
I mean, I could see Tim Cook demoing the crown thing. I could really like just see the presentation now in my head. And when you want or whatever, like just really hyping it up and then just twit. Like this seems like a realistic and potential feature. You're right. Usually Apple waits till like it's so proven that this thing is going to work. Then it comes out with its own.
They wait
version,
for everybody
right?
else to like, kind of mess up. And then they come in with the good thing. But now I don't.
I don't think they have
the luxury mm-hmm. with. You know, AR, VR headsets, because it's like that chicken and egg problems, right? If you don't have the hardware that can run apps, then no one's going to build apps for your hardware, right? And so, like, you know, they're never going to let, like, a Meta people, like, port stuff directly over to, you know, Apple's, you know, new VR, AR platform. They're going to want people to develop for that AR platform, like, natively.
Here's the thing.
Which is why Swift,
it is such a nascent, like, platform, like environment right now for all mixed reality stuff. Oculus stuff is coming to the PlayStation VR 2. Like a lot of the launch games on PlayStation VR 2 were games Oculus Quest, Meta Quest players were playing for a while, not the like exclusive stuff from, I think, straight from Meta. Maybe one or two of those actually made it over. But these companies all will have to start of like cooperate and share content between each other.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, like, and when I said like, you know, they're you know, I'm sure we'll get ports of, like, specific apps, but, like, you know, looking back at Apple's history, it's like, you know, what has been actually the most important stuff for Apple as a company? It's actually, like, the App Store and, you know, the Mac OS ecosystem. And so they want to have, like, a VR ecosystem where they can have, you know, their own environment and they don't have to deal with, you know, Meta's whatever, or, you know, if Samsung has their own thing, or even, like, the Viveverse and stuff like that. And I think the other part about it is, like, you know, maybe Apple is thinking about this, like, future in where everyone is remote working, right? And so, you know, there's this, and I know a lot of people don't like this idea, but, like, you know, there's an idea, it was like, hey, you go work in a new company, instead of a laptop, they give you a headset. And so, you know, if, you know, we can have a headset that, you know, everyone has in their daily lives and uses, you know, then you have a really valuable VR store that, you know, is working with this headset.
Do you think that's...
Maybe they're, you know, kind of trying to set up for a future like
functionally,
that.
Functionally, do you think that's true, though? Like, within the next 10 years, can we abandon laptops? Like, we need them for things. In terms of, like, writing, you may not always be in an environment to wear a headset or something. That's the ultimate thing I'm thinking.
I think if we did that mid-air typing thing... And we're thinking 10 years or more out, then yeah, I could see a headset being more transportable than a laptop. I could wear a pair of glasses on the plane and type midair on a fake virtual keyboard more easily than I can with a laptop, probably. Well, yeah. But I don't know that the technology
is going to get us there. This is very like sci-fi, just like pipe dream stuff. And it's like,
exactly.
You know, more than 10 years out, I can see it. It's going to take longer than that for any sort of transition to happen. But if you're talking about like, oh, this is going to be like a big thing in the next 5 years, almost certainly not.
Yep.
Not 5 years.
We will get back to like the vision of what this could be. I do want to point out, like, there's been a lot of reporting about like how kind of troubled the production for this thing is and the development of it has been. And also, Mark Gurman at Bloomberg has reported like a lot of Apple executives aren't fully like on board with the push to debut it now or show it off in its current state. Yeah.
I mean, is there a chance that this turns out to be another one of those like Air Power Matt things where like they try it, they announce then they're like, well, shit.
I don't think it's an Air Power thing because that was like a technical issue that they had like getting it actually released. The worry is like, is this going to be like a full-on flop for Apple? Because the company has not seen that in a while. That's the things we're worried about. But I want to throw out some names here. According to Bloomberg's reporting, like, seems like Tim Cook and Craig Federighi have been kind of hands-off on this. John Shruji, the SVP of Hardware Technologies, has been skeptical of it. He's reportedly called it more like a science project than a mass-market product. Hardware limitations kind of, like, hamper the development, especially, like, design stuff. Like, Mike Rockwell, a technology development group leader, was disagreeing with Johnny Ive early on. I don't know if Ive was like still involved with the design, but when they first started this, Ive did have some suggestions in terms of like he was trying to get rid of the separate computing pack. I think now the pack that you'll be wearing is just a battery. Everybody wants a pair of glasses. Like, I think that's the ultimate vision. Everybody's like, I just want a pair of glasses that does cool computing stuff. My thing, and talking back to the vision of this product, is that I think like some of the ways we work are just kind of like fundamental. I think we may always need like a device in front of us, be it a tablet, a phone, a computer or something. So what if the headset, the future headset, isn't just like a thing you necessarily need, but is a thing that expands like what's possible for you? So I'm thinking of like, what was the game? The game with, I can't think of it, Heavy Rain, right? Heavy Rain, the PlayStation game where, like, it has an FBI agent who puts on this headset. He sees, like, a huge amount of Minority Report-like screens in front of him. He does some finger swiping. He's manipulating data. He's doing stuff. But what if that stuff was always, like, tied to the device that's actually in front of you? So you have your iPad, you're browsing around, you're in bed, you put on the glasses, and you could spit that iPad, you know, the movie you're watching on the iPad, in midair at 100 inches. Or you're doing something on your phone and like maybe you could spit out like what you're seeing, like a bigger interface for your phone, like notifications, maybe a Twitter app here, maybe do some multitasking. You're sitting in front of a computer, blow that 13-inch MacBook Air monitor up into windows that are floating in the air around you so that if you're sitting in a coffee shop, it's like you were sitting in front of like five monitors if you wanted to, but you have a little computer on a coffee shop table. to me, that is a compelling vision for some people, right?
Yeah, I just think the ergonomics are going to be great. You can sit comfortably. Yes. I say this because my back is killing me right now. But yeah, I think there's a lot of potentially good use cases. I think very far off in the future, we will do away with that primary computing device and have that embedded on board the glasses itself. But maybe in the meantime, yes, there still needs to be some sort of middleman kind of device with its own screen and own brains. I did have three things I want to point out, but like, you know, one thing was when we were talking about the Oculus Rift and the Oculus Quest, I was like, damn, that company used really good names for its products. The second thing was when you're talking about like some, I don't know what you mentioned, but it triggered me to think about iOS 17. One of the rumors is that it will enable sideloading of apps, which holy what would be a big, actually would be the biggest news I would be more excited by.
Yeah. I don't know how that's one of those things that maybe the Android nerds or the real geeks will be into, but like, normal people will probably never touch. Yeah.
It would be like groundbreaking or like game changing in a way that matters to me more than other people probably. And I forgot what the third thing is. So just take it away.
Take it away from me.
Take the mic away from me. Anyway.
Yeah. I feel like that's it. A couple other things the reporting has shown that Apple may be doing more of a focus on gaming with this headset, which it is such an easy thing. And I feel like that's where VR kind of has been stuck. So it makes sense for Apple to spend more time there. By the way, we saw the news this morning that No Man's Sky officially launching on Macs as of this morning, as of today, actually. So if you haven't...
The Macs, like formerly HBO Max?
No, Mac.
Oh.
The thing we're talking about, Trillit.
This name is very bad.
But yeah, no.
Stay on topic.
Stay on topic. But Apple's, like, if you have an M1 or M2 Mac computer, you can run No Man's Sky. It'll probably run pretty well, too, because those chips are really, really powerful. So, yeah. I guess we'll see how it's going to... Oh, by the way, the headset, from what we're hearing, too, may also have an M2 chip or, like, a modified version of the M2 chip. So it should be plenty powerful on its own.
Right.
That's why the battery pack can kind of be its own thing to provide additional juice. I imagine this thing also working better in a desk or seated orientation where you could just like plug it into a computer, you know, or a charging port too, and just be on indefinitely and not even have to worry about battery life or something, right? So I have a lot of ideas swimming. I don't think Apple fully knows what they want it to be. And I'm just intrigued by, this is a very unique place where Apple's like, hey, we're going to put this thing out. It's not fully baked yet. We may need your help with this. Do you think, like, is that risky? Is that risky for Apple to do? Yeah.
I think that's the most interesting thing to me, is because usually Apple, you know, is a little bit slow because they like to wait until their stuff feels really polished. And so I think this is, like, maybe the riskiest thing Apple has done in a long time. And I'm just here to see what that reaction reception is going to be.
That's,
like,
I think we all are. So again, folks, like Sherlyn and I will be on the ground at WWDC this year. We hope to get a close look at it. We hope we can actually put it on our heads and test it out. Like, I want to do some hands-on testing. And you know, if you're a developer who's listening to this and you're attending DubDub and you want to talk to us about it, please let us know. Ping me on Twitter. Or whatever.
We want to meet y'all. Come say hi.
And I also want to talk to people outside of like the kind of like domains that Apple, well, the Circle of Geeks. And also, like, when you go to these events, the companies tend to like corral you like cattle into these specific rooms and these specific things. But I want to see like how the community is actually going to see these things. So anyway, folks, we'll be there. Stay tuned for more information about Apple's DubDub event next week. More about the headset. And we will even try to do a quick Tuesday episode, recapping the event and our thoughts on it. Okay. Okay. Let's move on to some other news. And actually, just in time, as we were starting to do this episode, Mark Zuckerberg came on Instagram and just like dropped the details about the Meta Quest 3 and some other news. So the Meta Quest 3 is going to be an updated $500 headset, better overall quality. It seems like it's going to have like full color mixed reality too, like full color mixed reality cameras. Sam, I think you had more of a chance to read this stuff. What is your takeaway here? Like, what are the big things from this?
Yeah. So far, you know, we're just getting a little bit of a tease, but the main bullet points are, full color pass-through. It's going to be about 40% thinner. You know, unnamed specifics in terms of like better display, better resolution. Unnamed Qualcomm next-gen chipset with 2x graphics performance. You know, everything sounds good. Their most powerful headset yet. I'm not sure if they're actually including the Quest Pro in that comparison or not.
I can't imagine.
But, yeah. You know, will be available sometime this fall for $500. And I think, you know, especially, you know, coming from the Quest Pro last year, I think the Quest 3 is the thing that everybody really wants because it's affordable. It's going to have backwards compatibility with the, you know, the entire Quest library, which is, you know, what you need, you know, building upon that ecosystem. And so I think, you know, if they can make a smaller, lighter, more powerful version of the Quest 2, that sounds like a much more engaging thing than the Quest Pro, even though I do appreciate the, you know, the specs and the technical capabilities of the Quest Pro. It's just, you know, it's so far out there that it's not really approachable.
Also worth noting, the Quest 2 is still sticking around. It's going back to $300. So they raised the price a couple of years ago and back to cheaper, back to keeping around. But what's up, Cher?
I was going to say, did they actually say this thing's going to be lighter and smaller and thinner? Because that's all I want.
40%
thinner. 40% thinner and more comfortable.
Hell yes, because look, this is $500, a sixth of the price of the headset we were just talking about. I mean, I don't think they're going to be the exact same market they're looking at, but way more affordable of a device and way more established in terms of what it can
do. But this one speaks to, I think, mainly the gamers and the people who want to play around with VR. And I think what Apple is doing is trying to skate to the next, you know, area where this is going to be, like true mixed reality, much higher quality lenses and everything. I've had the Meta Quest Pro here and I've tried it a couple of times and it's fine. It's great. It is some of the best looking standalone VR I've ever had. Very few apps fully support it, right? I think even that's still true, Sam. Like they haven't really fully taken
advantage. Yeah, yeah. And I feel like that's kind of the promise. Is like I think we're a little bit spoiled, like me and Dev, in terms of like, you know, we get to use the Quest Pro, and I love the optics on that headset. Like everything looks so much sharper. So when I go back and I use the Quest 2, I'm like, ooh, this looks, everything looks kind of soft and blurry, and I don't love it. So if I can get something closer to, you know, Quest Pro optics on a more affordable device, that sounds great to me.
But honestly, if you don't see something that's much, much better, I still think the Quest 2 looks really good. And if it's back down to $300, like, it is still the sort of, like, anybody can buy this, anybody can, like, start dabbling in VR. If you have a gaming PC, you can still plug it in and do some, like, higher-level PC gaming, too, with these things. That, to me, is, like, the true beauty of these headsets. And if Sony wants the PlayStation VR 2 to succeed at all, they really got to get some PC, like, compatibility going. Because that headset has great, great hardware. But, man, it's just PlayStation 5. It's just the games that they support on that, you know?
That's true. That's fair.
So this is not a direct competitor to whatever Apple's doing. This is just, like, another skew, another, like, you know, entry point in this market. I think it's gonna be interesting for sure for $500. Yeah,
if we're continuing to talk about headsets, by the way, I just love how companies are like, oh yeah, next week we're expecting to see Apple's one, so let's all jump on the bandwagon. You know, Mark is all like, yeah, let's do this on Instagram. Oppo, in case you know, don't tend to think of Oppo when you think of Apple and Instagram, Oppo is like, hey, yesterday on Wednesday, it was like, it announced its MR glasses for developers. Basically, it's the MR Glass Developer Edition. Now, Oppo has made headsets before, I believe a while ago. It was an AR headset or AR glasses called the Oppo Air Glass. The second version was actually launched last year, which that one looked a bit more like a standard pair of glasses. Meanwhile, the MR Glass, which by the way stands for Mixed Reality, I think, Developer Edition is a more of a headset that looks more like the Quest. And it's launching and it's going to be made available in China in the second half of the year. So again, another very like a device targeting more developers than straight up, you know, commercial or consumer use. This one will, the Oppo MR Glass will use Qualcomm's Snapdragon XR2 Plus chipset, which is like when Mark said the Meta Quest 3 is going to use like this new fast next gen Snapdragon XR chipset. I'm like, oh, I'm sure. So already outclassing this one, maybe, or not?
I'd imagine this one may also be running it, like given how how close they
exactly.
are.
I'm thinking they're using the
probably.
Same thing.
And, right, and if you exactly. remember, the Quest Pro from last year had the Snapdragon XR2. I don't even think it was the Plus chipset. So this is, you know, it's kind of a known quantity, I feel like, for at least the Oppo's headset. They're not, you know, they want to have some hardware available to use, but it's not, you know, this isn't breaking yeah. any
My thing is, like, it's great to see more hardware coming out. I hope we start to, like, standardize on the platforms and the software for it, because what is Oppo's thing going to be running? It's not going to be running the same thing that the Meta Quest runs, and the Apple stuff is going to be its
probably
own thing.
Probably the, yeah, its own thing. And is looking for developers to make apps for it too, right? So like we need to standardize, otherwise we're going to run into another smart home problem.
The VR industry has been dealing with this for a while. So there was Steam VR, the Valve stuff, and you know HTC came in with the Vive, and it was built all on that. And that is the more open source and more open environment for building things. And then you had Oculus's version, which was basically just after Facebook poured all their money into it, turned into sort of like the Mac version, the Apple version of what VR is. And even they are sort of like working together, because you can use an Oculus headset in Steam VR. It's not like the simplest thing in the world, but you can do it. But you can't use Steam VR stuff on the Oculus app, I believe. I believe that requires some hacking. So, and then there are exclusives to Oculus that you can't play on Steam. Yeah,
yeah. There's just a lot of fragmentation that makes it difficult to get stuff to play right with each other.
Hey, remember Daydream?
Who made that?
Daydream?
A company, known for freaking destroying all of their consumer attempts at hardware or anything.
Hey, Daydream VR. Hey, remember Cardboard?
Cardboard was pretty good. Cardboard was like a legit, like, Cardboard, oh, that's a cool good. Idea of like using your phone screen. Remember Samsung's Galaxy VR?
Google, I love you so much. You're just so funny.
Oh, man. I'm sorry. I can't. I wish Google was like a freaking competent consumer electronics company to be a competitor in this space, because I just want to shout at Google. That's all I want to do all day.
What if Google, like, this week is like, Apple's making mixed reviews, we're gonna relaunch Daydream. Let's do it. Let's relaunch Daydream.
I'm sure they're working on something too. I'm sure that that's
they learn from that. They're gonna whatever they do in the future is gonna be different than Daydream.
They're gonna bring back Google Glass.
They are going to at some point, like, that thing will live again.
Yeah.
But Google. I just let's move on to some AI news, because there were some things that also happened this week. Another group of AI experts, including Sam Altman from OpenAI and George Hinton, the quote unquote godfather of AI, the guy who basically developed and proved the idea that neural networks could work. We talked about him several weeks ago because he was telling the New York Times that he has severe regrets about the work he's done. Now they have all issued a statement. It's a very compelling sentence. It's a sentence that says, mitigating the risk of extinction from AI should be a global priority alongside other societal scale risks, such as pandemics and nuclear war. And this was posted at the Center for AI Safety, an organization with the mission to reduce societal scale risks from artificial intelligence. Guys, I'm so tired. I'm so tired of these people. Like, this is very much the... I think you should leave sketch. Like, we're all looking for the guy who did this. The guy in the hot dog suit who crashed into the building with the hot dog car. He is also looking for the guy who did this.
Yeah.
Like, and I also talk about, like, wanting to shout and, like, throttle people. I also want to do the same to these people, because they're doing it again. This is what they keep doing. They're like, oh my God, the stuff we created could end humanity. Maybe you should have thought about that before you set us down this path, guys. But also, this stuff does a great job of making you ignore the actual issues in front of AI right now, such as misinformation, such as, like, using, you know, data sets that basically continue things like racism and misogyny. Like, if your data set is bad and biased, then the data being spit out from your AI will be so as well.
Right.
You're
saying, like, by focusing on these almost hyperbolic, like, worst case scenarios, is causing people to lose focus, and instead people should be more focused on the problems at hand, which are also more serious and have a more
it's
real
a weird deflection. I think so.
Lives.
Yeah.
I was gonna say, like, I think the, like, original, like, purpose of the statement is good, because obviously you should be thinking about that stuff when you're designing AI and stuff like that. But, you know, if you think about the world, like, you know, who's the bigger threat to the world, humans or AI? I think humans are have already demonstrated that we're pretty good at messing things up.
We are living through an extinction event risk of right extinction. Now. It's called climate change. It is killing thousands of people every year.
If you were going to bet if, like, humans are going to end the world in the next 100 years or if AI is going to do it, I'm putting my money on the humans. For sure. Right?
We've already proven to be very
good. Humans also created AI, so, I mean, like, it's all us.
It just seems very stupid, and I do feel like a lot of these people have made millions, tens of millions. George Hinton, he and his team, I think Google paid like close to $50 million for three randos from a computer science group to come to Google. And now he's like, oh, I'm having second thoughts. Yeah. Are you donating that money to like AI regulation or to groups talking about AI ethics or anything? To me, this is my hot take. This is what we're getting with the push towards STEM education only. And ignoring the liberal arts and ignoring things like philosophy, because these people need to read a damn book. Because, yes, we've talked about a lot of these things. But anyway, what do you guys think? Any other thoughts?
I'll just point out that there's two funny comments in our live chat. Tom Rogers says, these AI guys are all like the Spider-Man pointing at each other meme, which, yes. And also Mark Dell says, we just need to make a more powerful AI that can prevent
extinction. We've already done that.
So, yeah, okay. Thanks.
We've already built AI to detect ChatGPT text. Somebody developed that. Like, it is straight on Terminator. Like, we will need AI to fight the AI on behalf of humanity. Anyway, speaking about AI, by the way, there was this great story that I want to talk about this week. The National Eating Disorders Association, a nonprofit that's existed for several decades, this week, or I think recently, fired their call center staff and volunteers. They also had some volunteers there as they tried to unionize. Instead, they swapped them over to an AI chatbot named Tessa that would give people advice around eating disorders. And this week they shut down that chatbot because it, quote, may have given information that was harmful and unrelated to the program. That's what you get for trusting AI, people. This is it. Especially right now, you can't just replace humans with AI. Sherlyn, you cover health stuff. You cover like things around this. What do you think of this? Did you expect any different?
Well, that's the problem with AI so far, right? A lot of the things we've seen so far are that it relies on outdated information. It relies on crowdsourced information, which means it doesn't have its own guiding principles, really. It's just learning and learning. And so some of the issues with this particular situation is that it was dispensing dangerous information like make an appointment with Dr. Oz. What the
lose
shit?
Lose some weight.
Are you kidding?
Yeah, this could help you lose weight.
The worst one, yeah. So it sounds like the National Eating Disorders Organization is going to, this shutdown is temporary until it fixes whatever, quote, bugs or, quote, issues that led to the chatbot dispensing that information. That doesn't seem like a good long-term solution, y'all. I don't think that something as sensitive of an issue and personal of an issue as eating disorders or body image can be handled effectively by non-human agents. I think, as someone who struggles with their own body image, as I'm sure a lot of people who listen to or tune into this podcast do, I think I would not enjoy if a bot was where I was getting my help from, especially if you go to the National Eating Disorders website and you're like being handled by a bot. Like, I don't think you'd feel, you know, what's next? The national like suicide helpline? Is that where we're going to put the bots?
Yeah. So I feel like the frustration building in me because it's like, we keep seeing this stuff. Like, what did you think was happening? You're going to replace humans with AI. What did you think was going to happen? And I think the big frustration for me is like, everybody knows that AI is not in a place where you can replace humans right now. You need the humans for oversight. And so like, for them to even attempt that is just like, why? What did you think was going to happen?
Any organization that does it, that replaces humans straight up with AI, kind of deserves the consequences that are happening. This is unfortunate.
I hope they get consequences.
I kind of hope
so.
I mean, this widespread, like, public, it's egg on their face. This kind of hurts a reputation. Like, this, I think that is it. But people could sue if the advice you're giving them is dangerous. And people could get hurt. People could die. You know, it's really, really rough. Yeah.
Also the intention, right? Remember, you said this just now, that they relied on the chatbot because it allegedly fired the human staffers after they tried to unionize. So, haha. I mean, again, not confirmed if it's true yet, but Vice reported
it. And you know that there's a bunch of businesses out there that's like, oh man, we can save so much money on staffing in CapEx by reducing the number of human employees and, you know, paying for an AI chatbot. And it's like, look, you can try it, but it's not going to go well.
It's not going to go well for you. Let's move on, because this is just infuriating, but yes. I wanted to get that story out there.
Potentially more positive.
I mean, again, this is another how we're fighting AI. But there is news. We wrote a story in Gadget about Twitter testing community notes for images. And community notes are those little things at the bottom of tweets that can correct and add more context to tweets and stuff. Typically, it's mainly for text tweets. But now this can appear right below images, it seems like. And this is really helpful for when there are bad AI generated images out there. And you're like, is the Pope actually wearing, you know, Balenciaga? Is the Pope wearing a puffy coat? This could be right below and be like, this is not real. This is a fake AI generated image. This is useful. What do you guys think?
I always, I find it so helpful because I subscribe to a subreddit called Instagram versus Reality. And I'm one of those people that when I see an image, I'm like, I don't really pay attention to like potential warping in the background, whatever. But when people point it out, I'm like, oh yeah, that person's waist is manipulated to look smaller or something. And it's this sort of thing that I think human beings can be helpful at, right? And I think that this is potentially useful. I just don't know who would have the time. I also think it's open to a lot of like potential exploitation.
The same community notes already, like people put up a lot of misinformation there too, but it gets voted down. So that's the thing. Like it is,
So we're turning it into Reddit?
Kind of. Great. Like it's people who are producing these notes are also more trusted users, I think, typically. Like, not everybody can create notes.
Well, Twitter is trusted users, which, given who runs Twitter now, I don't know if I trust it.
By the way, another interesting approach is we saw from Blue Sky, the news, that they are allowing you to choose your own algorithm, specifically in custom feeds. So let me read a report from Chris Abell here. In practice, the feature works a bit like pinning different lists to your home timeline on Twitter, in that users can subscribe to multiple feeds and easily slide between them. But custom feeds, because they're algorithmic, are also more powerful. For example, if there's a feed dedicated to posts from your mutuals, it may sound like a list, but that feed will automatically change as you gain more mutual followers. So it's kind of like a smart Twitter list, which seems kind of cool. This seems like a really useful way to like really optimize what you want to see on social. And Blue Sky is not like without controversy. There was a whole thing about the like inherent racism, I think, among the platform and some of the engineers as well. But it is a better alternative than Twitter right now. And I think it's a little more fun than Mastodon, from my experience. I don't know. Have you guys had any time with it yet?
No, I signed up for the waitlist. I'm still. Hey, Blue Sky people, if you're listening
please
hook us up.
I think we're waiting for a whole bundle of invites. Sherlyn, if I get another invite, you'll be the next person I send it to you. Okay. Yes, I will reserve it for Sherlyn. But anybody listening who has invites to share too, I'm sure Sam and Sherlyn will also appreciate them. But yeah, Blue Sky is still doing cool things, even though there has been like kind of a mess going on there. Let's move on to what we've been working on. I played Street Fighter VI. I reviewed Street Fighter VI. My review's up this morning. Perfect game. 10 out of 10. No notes. I think it's very good. I think it's
Devendra, you said perfect game. Jesus, you can't call everything perfect.
When was the last
time
I called something perfect, Juliet? That was a review from years ago, and I don't use any reviews anymore. That's a great.
My one gripe is I was looking at the pricing scheme, and like you have to like buy the characters, and it's like, you know, there's like the base game, and then like there's the deluxe version where you get like some extra skins and some extra unlockable characters. Like, yo, if I buy the game, I want all the characters.
I hear you. Those characters are not available yet, so the eventual DLC thing is kind of like where everybody's going, I think, right? That's not unusual, but the more importantly,
right? Yeah. They have like a season pass with like a you know, future updates for.
You'll have to pay more if you want some of these other characters, but I think the base game itself is really good. It's some good ass Street Fighter. It's not like Street Fighter V, which didn't even have an arcade mode for years after it launched. It really annoyed me. No, this one has a good arcade mode. It has a single player mode that is straight up like Yakuza. You can like go earn experience and fight. You can walk around the street and fight almost everybody you could see on the street. You could just like start punching somebody and initiate a fight. It is like a
nice
Dragon Ball-esque world, a Yakuza-esque world where everybody's like, oh, I love to fight. You like to fight? Let's fight. It's a fun time. We can all have a fight on the street. The game is great. I think it's fantastic. If you like,
can I play it on Switch?
No, that's a good question, actually.
I don't think the Switch
poor,
can handle
Street Fighter 6. Poor Switch. The Switch is a little too old.
Dang it.
You need a modern console, or you can play it on PC, but it's real good. So I just want to shout that PC out. Chillin', what's up with you?
WWDC all day, babes, and then doing some editing in the background. What about you, Sam?
I was going to say, apparently Street Fighter 6 runs pretty well on the Steam Deck. I haven't had a chance to try that out myself yet, but that sounds
awesome. You have
awesome.
To give me a little handheld gaming console, Sam. That's it.
If you, you ask badly,
yeah,
next time you I visit, forgot. I'll give you something.
Yay!
Okay. As for me, what I'm working on, I have a secret hands-on that I can't talk about right now.
I can't wait for this one to go. I know!
You know what it is, but
I know.
It's going to be up in a couple hours, so stay tuned to the site. We'll also have a video hands-on on YouTube, so check that out.
It's a good one.
Yeah, and I also got in the Lenovo Yoga Book 9i, which was the thing that my favorite product
at CES.
Is that
the double monitor one?
Yeah, this is the dual screen, Lenovo's dual screen laptop. Hopefully, you know, in the next couple of weeks, we'll have a review out for that.
Sam, I want you to go to a coffee shop, just do that thing, and just see what people do. Like, how do people...
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. I think we're going to try to do that for the video, just because, number one, I want to see if we can get reactions of people, like, what is this weirdo doing? But also, I think it actually is a usable, like, interesting thing where, like, hey, I set it up, I have two monitors, I have the little detachable keyboard. Hey, it suddenly have a more screen to work with when I'm, you know, working outside of my house. I think it's promising, but, you know, just very early in the testing for that. So, you know, it might be, you know, a week or two before we get that full review out.
Gotcha. Very cool.
All right. I'm excited to see that one. I like that a lot of people are speculating in the chat what the hands-on later today will be. And neither of you are correct so far. So people definitely thought it's the Apple headset.
We are still waiting to review the Asus ROG Ally, right? Like, we're still waiting on that hardware.
I finally got that in. We had some shipping issues with that. So that's finally here. Gonna be working on that at some point.
Very cool.
Nice.
I got something similar from Pimax, the VR headset company, and...
Yeah,
that looks so good so far. So
yeah, you're telling me about this.
We'll talk more about that. Also, want to shout out, we have a review of Diablo 4 from Igor at Engadget. Yep. So go check that out. Diablo 4 is coming. Is that today?
The early release for pre-order people, it's available today. Start date is next week. I'm going to be playing
What a week for games. Like, wow. Zelda just came out. There's so many good games. We are running out of time, but I want to do some quick things. We got some questions in from people, and I want to answer them. So... Q&A section, Darren Ann asked, they were wondering if Amazon's going to bring AI to Alexa, or have they put in too much work into Alexa to make that change? I think we talked about that in this episode. The Amazon Assistant. All these things kind of stink, and they have basic form, like they have some AI in them right now, like really basic neural network stuff. That's how they interpret speech. That's how they go fetch information, but they all have to get better. So I will not be surprised if Amazon's thing, if Google, if everybody starts to like bring in like generative AI and ChatGPT-esque stuff, it is certainly not too late. All these things can be upgraded. My question is, can they do this in the existing hardware? If this stuff is all cloud powered, why not? Like make all the Echo smarter. I think that would be a great thing for Amazon to do. We also have a question from Sumit Roy in Melbourne, Australia. Let me just see here. Yeah.
Less a question, more of a very positive comment, I think.
Well, positive comment. Found our podcast while looking for a summary of the Apple event, and they really enjoy us. They say thank you. They're listening to our show while walking their dog. Thank you for the tech news, AI updates, and Elon bashing and pop culture picks. So appreciate you. Thank you for listening, Sumit. They did leave a question about they want to hear a special about EVs and the future outlook of the industry. Australia is many years behind the US in this industry, and they're headed in a similar direction. I want to talk more about electric cars, and Sam, we'll definitely bring you on for that too, because you've done a lot of VR.
Yeah, maybe we can grab Andy, because I know Andy's been doing a lot of for some of our West Coast. Yeah,
we'll try to grab Andy for sure. I've been testing more and more EVs. I have a piece I've been working on for a while that just has not had time to like get pushed out, but that's a big deal for us. I think EVs are an important thing, but I also think that maybe a lot of countries and a lot of car makers are maybe getting EVs a little wrong. So we'll talk about that. Let's move on to our picks for the week. Sherlyn, what's up?
I want to say a quick shout out to Riley, if you're listening. And then also, my pick this week, Sam, you actually were there when I watched this. Can you guess?
American-born
Chinese, exactly. So I tweeted this out already so people know. We really enjoyed it. Sam, me, and Sam's wife were watching this together, and we're very picky about, like, Asian-based films, right? And American-born Chinese it stars a lot of people that we know. So Daniel Wu, who I love as the monkey god. It's based loosely on the story.
Most of the cast from Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Exactly. Yeah. It's based on the tale of Journey to the West. A very old and often retold tale in Chinese culture.
Also based on a graphic novel. Like the show itself was a graphic novel.
It is based on the graphic novel by Jean. I forget their last name. Michelle Yeoh is obviously incredible in it as Guanyin Pusa. All these are iconic roles that like when people in Hong Kong get to play it, they're like seen as like a huge step up. So playing Monkey King is a big deal. Playing Guanyin Pusa is a big deal. But really, obviously, this is a Disney Plus TV series. So it's focusing more on the character, the younger characters who are completely original for this series. It's just really surprisingly well handled. I mean, I think the pilot was directed by Destin
Daniel Green.
The last name I forget.
Yeah. Or Cretton, yeah.
DDC, all I know is, yeah. So really well done. And the story felt very authentic, even if, like, I just wasn't expecting it, right? I think Marvel/Disney is doing a very good job, at least with their more recent, I don't know if this is Marvel, but their more recent pieces around this sort of lore that's based in Chinese history and culture.
I mean, they had Raya and The Last Dragon. I don't know. And that was very much like...
I did not like Raya.
Raya was Southeast Asian. How far have you gotten into it?
I went to like episode 6. Like okay. I went after
there was the kind of flashback. They had like a weird like,
that one, the Imperial Kingdom, yeah, yeah, with the birthday where they one. Had,
like, it was
yeah.
like, more like, you know, Nyomo Wong's like
story.
That
was so good. That was a full ass Chinese only nice. Episode. It was very freaking cool. Great.
Yeah, I was like, when they started, I was like, wait, what are they doing? What is going on? I'm like, oh man, this is like a really interesting way to like do like the, you know, Nyomo Wong, Sun Kong, like origin
story.
That
took me right back to my childhood. Yeah, I can't tell you how many times I've seen that same story told by TVB or like CCTV.
It was an interesting take on that story.
Yeah, it was really cool to see.
Disney has done a lot of stuff for other cultures in general. I think like the Miss Marvel show, same deal. Like the Kamala Khan story, like it's all good. Like good stuff, and I think inform people about the history of Pakistan and India too. Like the rift there. So there's stuff going on. Anything else you want to add around that, Sherlyn or Sam?
No. So go check out American Born Chinese. This is a Asian story that I can get behind. So
I want to shout out some of the best TV shows ever made. All ended this week. Again, what a week. Succession finale just aired. Perfect. Barry's finale also aired. I think not as perfect, but it's still overall a very good show and a really like ambitious final season that I really love. So Barry, all good. If you're not watching Succession yet, get on that. Also, Ted Lasso is over. Ted Lasso is over? Question mark.
Not really. I have faith it's not.
I heard rumors it was the last season. I think it's the last season of Ted Lasso.
I think that is what the story is. Yes. Because
I think next season is AFC.
Yeah. Richmond. So they haven't fully or like announced anything, but the way everything ends, it's sort of like, well, you could just have a spinoff series.
Well, I haven't seen the episode. No spoilers.
Again, it's everything you're talking about, Julie, and that people have been talking about for a while.
Yes.
It seems like there is a setup for a spinoff series. And as messy as this final season was, I still had a lot of fun with it. Like I had fun hanging out with these folks. It is a perfect hangout show. Even if it's not like not nearly as good as it was in season 1 or season 2, I think the finale itself was a pretty good high mark for the series. So yeah, I love Ted Lasso. Very sad to see it end in this incarnation, question mark. But I hope to see more from these folks soon. Sam, what's up on you? Like on your stuff.
So I've been really enjoying Silo. I'm sure you've talked about Silo before. I know Dev did a good write-up for the site, so it, you know, it's great. It's, you know, post-apocalyptic, you know, everyone's trapped in this like bunker, kind of almost Fallout style. But yeah, go read Devinder's article on that. It's great. Can't recommend it enough. Sherlyn, did you ever end up watching Schmigadoon?
Schmigadoon
is a I hate musicals, and Schmigadoon is a musical on Max or HBO Max or whatever they want to call it now. And weirdly, I don't hate it. I think it's mostly because Apple TV Plus. Yeah. Oh, sorry.
I think it's TV Plus.
And I don't hate it because I think Keegan-Michael Key does a great job of like playing the hater role on that show in a way that like makes it more approachable for me. Cause you know, the whole, like, you know, we're going to do 1930s, 40s, like, recreations of musical numbers is not doing it for me. But the rest of it is, like, I appreciate the production quality. And then Ant-Man Quantumania is, you know, kind of finally available on streaming on Disney Plus. And I watched that. I enjoyed it. I don't know why the hate went so far on that movie.
I liked it.
To me, yeah. I think we're at the point with, like, you know, after Endgame, we're actually getting, like, some comic book-ass comic book movies where, like, a lot of stuff doesn't make sense. You're really going to have to, like, do the whole suspension of disbelief thing. But they feel weird and wild, and I think the movie looked incredible. I know, you know, it could be a little distracting, you know, at points, but... And, you know, characters like Kang the Conqueror are, like, incredibly comic book characters because we're talking about, you know, a million different versions of this one bad guy across the multiverses. And it's just, like, it's hard to keep track of. But, like, you know, as a self-contained movie, I enjoyed it.
Well, I read a review on the site. The title was Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania Broke Me. So you could just go read my response to all this. Yeah, yeah.
I know why you say that. So it's, like, I get it. Like,
it's just bad. It's real bad. But, yeah, yeah. It's fine.
I enjoyed it. I mean, it wasn't perfectly great, I enjoyed it.
I think the other thing is it looks ugly as hell. Like, it has nice colors.
Yeah, there were some parts of the CGI was not
the
great.
The use of the volume, a lot of the CG, and I think the overall, like, design of it feels like leftover Star Wars stuff that they never, like...
Like, in terms of character design, or you mean, like,
nothing feels... lived
in. I liked it, though. I liked that the characters were so different.
Yeah.
I agree that it doesn't feel lived in the real, but it doesn't feel lived in the real in the same way that a lot of the comic books, like, you know, a lot of the source material doesn't feel lived in and real because it's so abstract. So I think it's, like, it's where you kind of fall on that line of, like, you know, is it too crazy and you feel out of place? And I can, like, I think that's closer to what you're feeling. And I definitely get that.
I mean,
yeah.
I just want it to be better. Just want it to be better. That's all. Look better. Make more sense. The characters, like, have very little understandable motivation throughout the entire thing. But anyway, go watch this thing. Go read my review.
Yeah, let us know what you think, okay? Because now we're having this agree to disagree.
It's fine.
Disagree and
I never want to think about this movie again. Like, that's how I feel about it at this point.
Okay. Yeah. Wow. Let me know. Email me.
Email Sherlyn or the podcast. podcast@gadget.com.
Well, that's it for the episode this week, everyone. Thank you, as always, for listening. Our theme music is by game composer Dale North. Our outro music is by our very own Terrence O'Brien. This podcast is produced by Ben Elman. You can find Devendra online at...
At Devendra on Twitter and at Devendra at Mastodon.social on Mastodon and at Devendra on Blue Sky as well, if you're there.
You can find Sam online at...
At Sam Rutherford on Twitter and, as always, on @gadget.com.
If you have any questions about that whole Journey to the West story, you can send them to me. I am still on Twitter at Sherlyn Lowe. Email us your thoughts at podcast@gadget.com. Leave us a review, please, on iTunes or your favorite podcast platform, because that'll help people discover us. And subscribe on wherever you get your podcasts. macOS Golden Gate Bridge. No, actually, no, wait, hang on, I take that back. macOS Alcatraz.